Better Leaders, Better Schools, episode number 14.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
You know, we're going to make changes, and I'm going to look at myself as a leader and what I need to do differently. And so that's when I first started seeing the power of a team. I mean, it's not about an individual person.
Hi, this is Daniel Bauer from Better Leaders, Better Schools. I help school leaders create a winning culture, focus on the essential, and lead with courage and integrity. The blog and podcast was made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Get more content and resources at betterleadersbetterschools.com. Better Leaders, do you need some winning leadership phrases? Download my free gift to you, The 15 Phrases of Effective School Leaders. The 15 Phrases of Effective School Leaders is an MP3 where I share a variety of phrases that have served me so well over the years in all my leadership positions. Get it now for free by texting PHRASES to 33444. That's PHRASES, PHRASES, to 33444. Or by visiting the website betterleadersbetterschools.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Start your free 30-day trial and grab that free book right now at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. And now it's time for some 5-star reviews. Dr. Mark C. says, excellent show. Very thoughtful, right to the point, and powerful information. HGC to the third, great information for leaders in learning. Daniel does a great job of interviewing successful leaders in the learning environments that allow learning and creating winning cultures in their learning worlds. Keep moving forward. Aaron Pena has been an educator for 18 years, 12 of which has been in administration at the elementary and secondary levels. He graduated with his bachelor's degree in education from Baylor University and his master's degree in education administration from the University of Houston, Clear Lake. He is currently working on his doctoral degree at the University of Texas at Austin. Aaron has obtained many awards for his work in educational leadership, including the Johnny Veselka Texas Association of School Administrators Award, the Exemplary Instructional Leadership Award from the Cooperative Superintendents Program at UT Austin, and is the current HEB Excellence in Education Texas Principal of the Year. Aaron has a passion for working with all students, but enjoys working in suburban environments going through the urbanization process. He has a beautiful wife who is also an educator and 3 lovely daughters, 10, 11, and 13. Ladies and gents, may I introduce to you Aaron Pena.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm really glad to be here.
Thanks, Aaron, so much for deciding to join the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast today. Let's just jump right in. What inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Wow. I'd have to say my mom, now she was a bilingual coordinator for many, many years in the Dallas area. And she just always saw something in me that told her, I need to be in front of kids. I need to be teaching. I've got a knack for it. Of course, I was at school pursuing all kinds of other things. I just thought I'd be a businessman or maybe I'd do pre-med. And finally, I saw the light, I guess, and realized that, you know what? I hate accounting. Why was I taking business classes? Switched my major to education it was my sophomore year. And haven't looked back since, man. I've absolutely loved the journey so far.
And Aaron, how would you describe your leadership style? How did you develop this style? And what experiences or mentors helped you develop your leadership style?
Wow, my leadership style it's evolved over the years, I would say. I started out hard-headed, full of bravado. this young assistant principal. I mean, I was 26 when I got my first AP job, so that'll tell you, you know, I knew very little, but I thought I knew it all. And life has taught me that, man, it's a journey. It's all about learning, and I definitely don't have it all figured out. And so I would say my leadership style, definitely I'm an instructional leader because that's where my heart is. I'm a teacher. I'm going to always be a teacher. And so I love sharing, you know, the just lessons with teachers and getting in depth with how they can make a teacher more, I'm sorry, a lesson more rigorous. How can they, you know, impact more kids on a larger scale? I love also, so there's the instructional leadership side, but I also love distributive leadership in organizations. I'm studying that in my doctoral work right now. And so I'd say also that I know the cliche is servant leadership, but I'm definitely the kind of guy who wants to give back. And anybody that can possibly learn something from me, I'm all about sharing. So I guess if that's a sort of thing, I'm a sharing leader or a giving leader. Maybe I'll coin that as a new phrase.
Yeah, I like the idea of a sharing leader. Since you are studying this in your doctoral work, can you dig in a little more about what you mean by distributive leadership? Yeah, what that means to you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's Peter Senge who came up with this notion of organizations not being laid out like, you know, old-fashioned bureaucracies, you know, where it's all top-down. And the people with the titles at the top make all the decisions and the grunts at the bottom do all the work. You know, it's not the way real organizations should run, and especially schools and school districts. And so he came up with this term called web of interconnectedness. And that's definitely what we are at my school in particular. I mean, we're all connected. And so yes, I may have the title of principal, but I want all teachers, staff, everybody from the office to the library, to interventionists all across the school to be leaders. And so with that means that there's going to be a decision making that's distributed. There's going to be responsibilities that's also distributed, but also the vision. The vision needs to be carried not by only the leader, although absolutely the leader better be the one saying, hey, here's the direction. Let's go this way. But everybody needs to be a vision carrier as well.
And how do you actually build that leadership within your staff if everyone, including the teachers, the librarian, the custodians, really it sounds like almost every adult in the building's a leader. How do you build their capacity so that they can make those positive decisions that are in line with your mission and vision?
Well, that's one of the things I learned along the way. I think the hard way, I had to learn a lot of humility. Mm. And over the years, I've really discovered, I guess, that if other people have a chance to make decisions, even if I don't always agree with those decisions, in the end, it's going to benefit the organization so much better. If they make a decision that I don't agree with, but they have kids in mind, and it might be risky, and it might even fail, then we will all have a chance to learn something new, something better, and we can move forward. And that's what distributed leadership is all about. When teachers, when anybody in the building has no fear, I guess, in risk-taking, then you're really getting somewhere as an organization. It's kind of hard to do, though, especially when I've come in twice to – this is my second school as principal, and I spent 5 years in my first school, and now this is my fifth year here in this school. Wow. And both times you come in and it's all about kind of checking out the landscape, figuring out what the culture is of the school, and then start to see how can you move this thing forward in a direction that you feel it might be better. And in both situations, it was all about building up leaders, which folks have maybe been kind of their talents haven't been used, or maybe their voice has been kind of silenced. And do those people have something to offer the organization? So you give those people not necessarily a title, but a voice. And there's practical things you can do. One of the things that we have here at my particular school is we have committees and they meet monthly. So we have content area committees and committees for other initiatives of the school. And then they get together and they talk about what their decisions are going to be moving forward. And of course, I'm part of that process, and there's a back and forth. So it's pretty cool. So there's some practical things you can do, but you got to always have your ear to the ground to see, whose voices are not being heard that the organization can definitely benefit from listening to.
So I love this idea of these committees that meet on a consistent monthly basis, and they serve the school and try to make decisions with kids' best interests in mind. But what are those practical steps that you take to build, I guess, their lack of fear and the idea of risk taking within your culture? We read about this quite a bit in leadership books, but we don't necessarily have steps outlined on how to do this. So this is your second school that you're leading. How do you do that? How do you build this risk taking, fearless culture?
Well, one of the things that I do is I try to be open with folks, and I try to, it's kind of hard for me, especially my personality type. I've had to learn to be open about my mistakes.
Okay.
And open about falling on my face, and then sharing that in a way where people know that, you know what, as a principal, I mess up. I've got to answer to the community, or I have to answer to the superintendent. And that's okay, because if we have the right goals of student success in mind, then we can fall and we can get back up and keep moving forward. So I try to be as transparent as possible, and I encourage that for my teachers as well to try something. And you know what? There's power in language.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to say it, you know, in a faculty meeting, you know, hey, let's spend the next 5 minutes talking about the good things. Let's talk about risk taking. Is anybody taking some risks now, maybe instructionally or in other ways that you'd like to share with the group?
Yeah.
And so when they know that the leader, the titled leader, the principal isn't going to, come down on them for trying something and maybe it doesn't work, then you start to build that trust, and you start to really see it take hold within the cultural piece of the organization.
So if I hear you correctly, it sounds like you own your mistakes, you model mistake making, and are held accountable by the different stakeholders within the school. But what I also really appreciate about your leadership, Aaron, is that you very intentionally create space where people can talk about those mistakes or those risks that they're taking. And to me, you know, I haven't sat in one of your meetings or observed how that impacts the faculty, but I would think that it would start as a catalyst, some momentum within the faculty that, hey, wow, you're doing this over here. That sounds amazing. You know, there's this idea that I've always had, I want to try out, and it sort of, I guess, would just spread through the faculty. Is that something that you're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely it is. Our faculty used to be very safe, I guess, okay, with each other. There was that groupthink going on in every team, every meeting. It was just groupthink. It was just, hey, let's play nice. Let's get together and sing Kumbaya. And one of the things that we've been trying to do more recently is help everybody realize the power of conversations, but real conversations, yeah, where we get into what's working, what's not working. And so one of the things that we're really talking about this year, and I think it ties in with this idea of distributive leadership, because people need to be okay with voicing their opinion or voicing their concern. For example, if I'm on a particular team and I'm a teacher and I see that there's a practice going on that's not best for kids, I should feel not only the responsibility, but almost have that invitation from just coming from the culture of the school to say, hey, you know what? I don't think this is right. Let's see what research says about this particular practice, and let's see if we need to change it. That would never happen at this school, but now I'm starting to see that. We're having some conversations that aren't necessarily just so bland and benign, but we're starting to have real conversations about real issues, about instruction. And when you start getting into teachers' instructional design, man, I tell you, it gets sensitive. And so you have to have certain pieces in place within the culture if you're ever going to go there. And so we have that in place. And so it's getting kind of exciting to see. And we can talk about cool stuff now that 3-4 years ago, man, it would have just been like, you're crazy if you're going to talk about that stuff in a team meeting.
Better leaders, are you looking to upgrade your leadership potential? I have another free gift for you. This one is a PDF which I call 15 Questions Guaranteed to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. Unlock your leadership potential now for free by texting UNLOCK NOW, that's all one word and no spaces, to 33444. Text UNLOCK NOW to 33444 and start reflecting on the 15 questions guaranteed to unlock your leadership potential. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. That's betterleadersbetterschools.com/book to start your 30-day free trial right now. Aaron, so we've talked about some of the great things you're doing in terms of building that space for real conversations to happen and people to share the risks that they're taking. I'm fully confident that you're an incredible leader, but you also shared how you you own your mistakes. You model that mistake that they happen, and you fine with being held accountable. And I think that mistakes are probably sometimes our best teachers. So we love stories here at Better Leaders, Better Schools. And do you mind unpacking maybe what you consider your worst leadership mistake? And what did you learn from that event?
Well, my worst, I have many, I'll admit. But I'd have to go back to my first year as principal, man. This is going back 10 years. I was brought out of being an assistant principal at a high school, and my superintendent told me or asked me to take a school that was struggling a little bit. And so this was December. And of course I said yes. So I'm in there full, like I said earlier, full of bravado. I'm like, yes, we're going to take over the world. This is going to be the best school in no time. And I obviously was thinking that leadership back then was what Jim Collins in Good to Great calls that level 4 leadership, right? You know, where it's about the leader, and I'm going to make a name for myself, and I'm going to do this by myself. If anybody wants to come, great, you know. And I'm serious. That's the attitude I had. And I remember, and he's still one of my mentors, and he laughs about it, but I remember telling Dr. Hernandez, because this school was not successful at the time. And I told him, you know what? This year we're going to hit exemplary, which was at the time Texas's highest ranking, you know, when they do all the accountability stuff. And he just kind of laughed. He said, you know what? Just do your best. And with a couple of months later, you know, the tests were upon us, and you know how all that works, especially in Texas. You know, it's a big testing kind of state. And, man, when the results came in, we actually went backwards and we went to unacceptable, which was just, you don't want to be an unacceptable school here in Texas at the time. And so it was devastating, man. And I learned some valuable lessons, you know. I mean, when I got those results at central office and I had to go back and share the data and do a presentation in front of the entire faculty and staff, I owned it. I owned it. And there were some teachers crying. And I said, you know what, folks, I have failed you guys. I didn't do the due diligence that was necessary. I didn't look at the data right. We didn't focus on the right things. And it's my fault. You know, we're going to make changes. And I'm going to look at myself as a leader and what I need to do differently. And so that's when I first started seeing the power of a team. I mean, it's not about an individual person. It's about a team. And when folks who are like-minded and passionate about the same things can come together, and you can do some amazing things. And so that following year, we did get off that list and we went up to recognized, which was the second highest. And and for a school with 99% economically disadvantaged, that was a pretty big deal in the district. But I never did forget that, you know what, it's not about bravado, it's not about arrogance, and it's not about that one leader who's going to just come in and save the world. It's not Lone Ranger education that we're doing here. And so, yeah, that was a big mistake. But thankfully, I feel that I've learned some major life lessons through that.
It was that humbling experience there what helped you transition from a more selfish sort of level four leadership to others focused level five leadership.
Yeah, I hope so. And I, you know, I've read that book multiple times, you know, Good to Great. And I like to imagine that I will someday be a level five leader, but I still know that there's some of that old Aaron in me that I have to, you know, just kind of beat back down.
Sure.
But I definitely have learned that, man, it's, you need people around you who are smarter than you, mm-hmm. Who are better than you, and then you're doing something right. And so I've tried to, help myself realize that, you know, when I'm hiring, I don't know if you've read the book Courageous Leadership by Bill Hybels, but man, that's another, key book that taught me, especially when he talks about in that book that he would purposefully hire people with more education than him,
right,
smarter than him. And I've really tried to put that into practice, and that's made a world of difference. And again, ties back to distributive leadership. And I have people here who, if I just, you know, don't come into work for a week, they're honestly not going to miss me too much, because I mean, it really runs like a well-oiled machine in so many ways. And that's fantastic. And that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, that kudos to you to having the humility to find people that are smart to enhance your team, and that even if you're out a day or two taking, you know, care of other types of business, that the school can run efficiently even without you being there. But going back to Bill, yeah, that's my pastor actually of my church, so I'm familiar with most of his work.
That's awesome. He's awesome.
Yeah, awesome guy. And what you're talking to about as well connects to the Global Leadership Summit, which I don't know if you've ever participated in. I highly encourage you and all leaders listening to the show. The Global Leadership Summit happens the first week of August. It's an international event, and it's put on by Bill Hybels and my church, but it's a place where he says that pastors humble themselves to learn from business leaders and vice versa. And one of the speakers this year, Sally Krawcheck, was speaking exactly to your point right now, Aaron. And the idea was, sometimes, you know, you might not even hire the most qualified person because they might be very similar to you in terms of how you think, process, and, you know, take on challenges. And the key is, can you hire smart people that are going to push you and stretch you? And the key question to ask yourself is, does this person make my team better, right? Not, is it somebody I'm comfortable with working, that they're a sure win, they're a hard worker, but are they going to come in and challenge me in such a way that they complement my weaknesses because those are their strengths? And it takes a lot of courage, and exactly the type of courage you have, Aaron, to hire those type of people to enhance your team so that the school can run efficiently even when you're not there.
Yeah, man, absolutely. You need the right kind of chemistry. Again, going back to Hybels, you know, he has his four C's, and you know, you have that person of character. That's absolutely the number one you need to be looking for when you're hiring anybody in any position. But then you got to have the competence, but you have to have chemistry. This mm-hmm. person has to fit, you know, that kind of the right people on the bus. Right. You know, it's become a cliche too, but it's so true and it's so powerful that you got to have that right fit. And you got to have people that are also willing to step up and tell you when you're wrong too.
Mm-hmm.
I try to not hire yes people. I try to hire thinkers. And sometimes people they're going to say, you know, man, Mr. Penny, I don't agree with this decision. I think we should go this way. It's like, well, let's take a look at it. That really does make a huge difference with the trust factor, and also with going from a bureaucratic organization to a learning organization.
Are there any activities or questions, strategies that you have through the interview process to identify people that will enhance your team and not be afraid to speak up and challenge you? You know, because you definitely, like you said, don't want to hire people that are just going to agree with you all the time. So how do you identify those folks?
Yeah, there's a lot of body language that you have to read in interview when you're interviewing somebody. And one of the questions that we ask that's kind of insightful is, you know, what's the difference between a good teacher and an outstanding teacher? And we get a lot of good answers from that. The other one is that old favorite of what is your greatest weakness? You know, one of the red flags, and if anybody listening to this, you know, maybe there's a few tips on interviewing what not to do is don't say, oh, well, I'm a workaholic and that's really my greatest weakness. Come on. No, it's not.
Yeah.
That's not a weakness.
My weakness is I care too much about the kids.
Yeah. You've heard them too. You know, we've all heard them. You know, but what I like to see is I like to see a person who is real. You know what? If you've got an issue, if you have something about yourself or your personality that's a weakness, I want to hear what it is, and I want to see how you deal with that. You know, how have you wrestled through that in your life, and hopefully you're coming out on the other end eventually, flipping that thing around. Like for me, I mentioned it before. You know, my bravado and arrogance, man, that's been a weakness of mine. It's been that thorn in my side for many years.
Right.
Because I thankfully, you know, God has given me some talents in some areas where you know in the past I've you know done well in some respects, but then I have to, you know, remember that, man, I don't know how to do so many things that I have to be willing to learn. And the good part of having that weakness, though, is there is that flip side where sometimes you do need to have courage and sure. You do need to feel like, you know what, if we pull together and if we're focused on the right things, we can achieve any goal and we can change the world. And I think so. No arrogance. We don't want that in educators, but definitely courage. And so there's kind of that flip side of the same coin when it goes with your weaknesses and your strength. So sometimes in an interview, you can see some glimpses of that. Mm. Like, does this person truly know themselves? Do they know that we all have real weaknesses? And it's okay because we're human, but we've got to be able to figure out a way to be real with ourselves, be real with all of those people around us who care about us and want to make us better, and find ways to turn the weakness into an actual strength.
Knowing what you know now, Aaron, what would you tell yourself as a novice principal?
Well, all right, I'm going to give you a different answer. Because I've been going back to the same thing, kind of a lot here with the you know, learning yourself and changing you know, your weaknesses into strengths. But I would go back and tell myself as a novice principal to be more patient with people, be more patient with teachers who may not be as passionate as you are about the initiatives that you're bringing forward. Mm. And that's okay, because everybody can move at their pace. And when we start putting up those have to's, like, you know what, you know, if I come into a new building and we're starting these new initiatives and I want to see people with the same level of enthusiasm that I have, or if not, you know, heads are going to fly. That never works. And so I would tell myself as a new principal to, you know what, calm down. Just because people don't seem as enthusiastic about something that you're excited about doesn't mean that they are not doing an awesome job in the classroom. And so I would make sure that my younger self would know that you got different kind of people. You got high capacity people who can just do all kinds of things. You know, they don't need a lot of sleep. They can be reading research articles night and day, and they're on Twitter, you know, 24/7, and they're just learning. But not everybody is a high capacity person, and doesn't mean that they cannot be an awesome teacher. Hmm. And so I would help myself realize that, man, there's room in the tent for everybody. And, you know, as long as we find a way to come together under a unified vision and we're moving at the same, in the same direction, we don't all have to necessarily move at the same pace.
That's a really good point and a tip that I like to share with leaders all the time, both those that are emerging and veteran leaders. It's so important that you honor your people before your vision, because if you are so passionate, and you should be so passionate about the vision, and like you were talking about, and it's great, you know, the folks won't be able to see you on video like I can, but Aaron's face lit up when he said, we can change the world. And those are the type of leaders, you know, that we want in schools, because we truly believe that we can change the world with what we're doing and the education we'll provide our students. But you can't expect everybody to have the same passion, the same work ethic, or the same style as you have. And if you don't honor your people before your vision, guess what? The vision doesn't happen. And maybe you would agree with this, Aaron, but that might have been a little bit of what you experienced that first year as your school backslid to that unacceptable rating before you were able to jump up to the second highest rating. So guys, honor your people before your vision.
Absolutely. You can't do it alone. You need a team, and they all need to feel worth and valued.
Is there anything else you can add, I guess, to what sets you apart from leaders in education? What's your secret sauce? I know we talked about distributive leadership, the honesty, the vulnerability, the owning of mistakes, but is there anything else that you think sets you apart from other leaders in education?
Well, you know, honestly, I'd have to say I'm a lifelong learner. Okay. And I know when you hear that, you're thinking, man, everybody is. But you know what? I've taught myself how to propagate roses. Okay. Because some kids were getting involved in that. And I was like, that is cool. I want to learn how to do that. I taught myself how to knit. So I was knitting scarves and hats and all kinds of stuff, because we had an enrichment group and a group of girls were learning how to knit. And so I challenged them to create some YouTube style videos showing people how to knit. And if their videos could teach me how to do it, then you know that they're doing a great job. And guess what? They sure did. And I was knitting like crazy. You don't look at me and automatically think, well, I bet that guy knows how to knit. But I taught myself how to play guitar because I want to be able to go around during Christmas time and, you know, do Christmas caroling with the kindergartners. I'm constantly learning. And I actually love it, man. I mean, I've got ball pythons in my closet here in my office, and I've got dart frogs that we're showing the kids how they go through their whole metamorphosis and go from tadpoles to frogs and stuff like that. And whenever we're doing that stuff, man, I'm like a little kid. I get so excited, you know, when the kindergarten chicks are hatching down the kindergarten wing.
Yeah.
But as soon as I hear about it, man, I'm running down the hall. I got my camera out. Like, this is going to be awesome. I know everybody loves to learn, but I don't know. There's something about me when there's really good, fun learning going on in my building. I've got to be there. I've got to be a part of it.
So what's that one thing you're learning about right now that you're super excited about?
Well, we're hoping that one of our snakes here at school is pregnant, and okay. We're hoping she has eggs, and then we'll get to show kids. We've got a morning show, a live morning show, and so the kids bring an animal every Friday, and I do a little interview thing and talk about the crested gecko or the bearded dragon or the turtle or whatever. And so I'm learning about that stuff, and it's really pretty exciting. I haven't gotten to where I can let the tarantula crawl on my hand, though, man. I'm still a big chicken, and I don't know if I ever get to that point, but I don't know, maybe if a kid dares me or something, then maybe I'll do it.
That sounds okay. I don't know that I would let a tarantula crawl on me at all. You know, as a leader in a school, everybody wants something from us, and a lot of times they want an answer or need some type of work or whatever. But how do you avoid distractions and stay focused on the job? And is there some type of boundaries you set up to ensure your success? Or what is it that you do to avoid distractions?
Well, I try to get a lot of the paperwork stuff done outside of the school hours, if possible. You know, when there are kids in the building, as much as possible, I'd like to be available to them. Mm. I'd like to be visiting classrooms, you know, snapping pictures to tweet things out, just helping with the branding of the school, because we've got an awesome school here. I try to do some of those kind of things. You know, Saturday mornings, I'm at the Starbucks, I'm drinking my coffee, I've got my computer out, and I'm doing the not so fun part of my job, you know, elsewhere as much as possible. Another thing that I do, man, is when I was an AP, I would have lunch in the cafeteria with the kids, especially at the high school level. And that was such a huge I don't know. I don't know if it was a time saver or what, but it got me out there because you have to, you know, you have to be on lunch duty. But a lot of times as APs, sometimes we're like hanging back and, you know, just being the guard kind of guy, you know, on lunch duty. Like, what's that about? Man, you got to get after all the kids leave and then you're going to go pull your ham sandwich out of the fridge. You know, they want to see their principals, their assistant principals there with them. So some little tips like that. Some of the other things that I try to do is, delegate. You know, there's some things that, you know, perhaps, you know, if you're lucky enough like me to have a principal secretary, that person can take some things off your plate, you know, answer some emails that maybe, can be answered by somebody else, or, you know, go through the mail and separate the junk from the valuable stuff, you know, some things like that.
So it sounds like you really want to be there, engaged with the kids during the school hours. So sometimes you're working, out of school on the paperwork stuff, but, that could also, you know, eat into your personal time for your family. So what's the balance there then?
Man, I'm still learning that one. I've got three little girls and, when they were younger, it was a little easier, but now my oldest is in middle school and they are involved in everything. And so I'm lucky enough to have made it to every cross country event and every soccer event. And so, you know, I try to just juggle the stuff. Saturday mornings for me, my family knows that, I'm going to be busy. I'm going to be working on my dissertation stuff or school stuff for several hours. I get up early and that's my office at Starbucks and there I am. But when I'm done with that, I'm done and I'm home and I'm dad and they've got all of me. And so I think that's important.
That's great.
It's important to not be kind of half in and half out. And you got to find time to, yes, get the job done. It's definitely not a 9-to-5 job, but you got to be dad and you got to be husband and give them your quality time.
What time do you wake up, if you don't mind me asking?
On Saturdays, I'm usually up by, I don't know, about 6 o'clock maybe. And I'm, you know, on my computer by around 7.
Okay.
And I've worked for a good maybe 3, maybe 4 hours, depending on soccer schedule for the day. And then if I can't do it on Saturday morning, then I do it on Sunday morning. And then I just go to church later or do something, you know, just kind of adjust.
So Aaron, we know you love to knit. We know that you are building up your courage to let a tarantula crawl over your hand. But, and we have, the girls and their soccer games. But what do you do for fun outside of the dissertation and learning? And what do you do? What's, you know, a special thing that's for you?
Well, I like to go out and run. We have a beautiful park here in Waco, Cameron Park, just miles and miles of trails. And I like to get out in the woods and run. Before this whole doctoral thing started, I used to do triathlon. So I love swimming, biking. I don't have time for that yet, but I'm hoping to get back into that once I wrap this school stuff up. So yeah, man, I love doing, I love building things. You know, I'll build like a doghouse or I'll build a shelf for my garage. You know, just anything with my hands. It just really, really pumps me up.
What's one book every principal should read right now and why? I know you mentioned Peter Senge and the fifth discipline, I'm guessing, maybe. We talked about Jim Collins' Good to Great, Bill Hybels' Courageous Leadership. But what would be that one book you would recommend to every principal right now?
Man, those are fantastic. I'm definitely a – I'd probably say one of the books I've read here in the last couple of years that has really just changed the way I – see schools and just leadership is Lee Bowman and Terrence Deal. It's Bowman and Deal's 4-frame approach to leadership. And in that book, they talk about these 4 lenses, these 4 paradigms that leaders need to be aware of. And there's the structural frame. And that's kind of how, you know, if you think of a clock, you know, the gears, you know, we talk about a well-oiled machine, you know, when things are just happening just perfectly, they work in sync. So I think of like a battleship, you know, if we were to go onto a battleship and the Navy's got it down. That's the structural frame. Then you got the human resource frame, and that's that servant leadership style, and realizing that the human, the people on the ship, you know, on the bus, the people in the organization are what really makes the thing tick. And you cannot be a leader and just look at things through that structural frame without realizing, you know what, the people are who are going to be those world changers, like we talked about. Then you got the political frame, and a leader needs to be an advocate, and a leader needs to be somebody who knows what's going on out there in the legislatures, you know, the state legislatures, and know what's going on that it's going to impact kids down the road. Mm-hmm. And so we need to not ignore that frame. And we need to be able to look at education through the political lens as well. And then finally, a leader needs to have the symbolic lens. And that's where a leader realizes that he or she, people are looking to you. You know, they're looking to see if you're inspired. They're looking to see if you're somebody worthy to follow. And that's where the branding of the school comes in, you know, and building those stories together that every school and every organization should have. The, wow, remember when, or look at how far we've come, you know, those kind of phrases, you know, that help you realize that, you know, a leader is not just the manager of the school, but there's so much more. Right. So yeah, definitely Bowman and Diehl's four model framework, and that approach to leadership, it's pretty powerful.
So we will definitely hook up with the listeners all these great books that we talked about in this episode in the show notes. So if that's something that you want to dig into and pick up and understand more, this four model framework, the approach to leadership by Bowman and Diehl, we'll have that for the listeners. Aaron, this is the biggest question of your life. No, I'm joking. But you have this one here. You're building a school from the ground up. You are not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school, Aaron, if you were given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
Top three priorities. Well, one of the priorities would be personalization of mm-hmm. learning, or individualized learning. Another one would be just having an eye on the future, and that technology piece would be very, very important. You know, what kind of workers, what kind of people are going to be successful in the future? I would want our students to have those kind of experiences within the school. And probably the last one would just be fun. I'd want the school to be a fun place. I would want a school, you know, and we watch those movies, you know, and when the bell rings and the kids just bust out for that last day, you know, before summer, that wouldn't be my school. You know, it would be the opposite. People would be like beating the door down to get in. Come on, don't close this place up. You know, let's keep it open. And so going to the personalized learning, I would want every student to have their own educational plan, and somehow, and you know, people are going to have to figure out how to do this, but somehow, you know, they'd have their little tablets that they're walking around, or maybe their little Apple Watches, and there could be, let's say a student is passionate about the culinary arts. And so there's several kids, and so they're all walking around going to their own maker space type places to work on certain projects. But then, you know, that famous chef is coming to the school. And so the culinary arts, you know, section is going to start. So all these kids would get their readout saying, oh, report to the, you know, the chef's wing, and they show up, and then they're going to learn measurement. They're going to learn about chemistry. They're going to learn all kinds of content that's integrated in this lesson that they're passionate about. You know, and there'd be a lot of hands-on learning. And so I think that would be really cool. I would have loved to have been in a school like that, where I could get my learning from not just a book, but real life hands-on experiences. And so if kids could learn something on an iPad, something without a teacher, in a 5-minute video, then that should happen. But then we should have the teachers focused on facilitating that passion-based learning kind of experience, those challenges that, you know, we're hooking up different kids to solve this problem over here. We got this pollution problem over here. Our cafeteria is, you know, wasting too much. So, you know, this team is going to, work on for the next couple of weeks on that problem to see if they can come up with some solutions. And so there'd be all these kids just, you know, working and teaming up in different ways depending on what they're passionate about. I don't know. It makes a lot more sense in my head and what I can see up here. I wish I could hook you up to my mind.
No, that's great. I think you painted a picture of a beautiful school that has that personalization and this problem-based approach to learning with its eye on the future and incorporating tech. It was definitely very hands-on. I love it. And then the last piece too, sometimes we forget this, but we got to dial back maybe to our kindergarten days or whatever. But don't forget, school can be a fun place. And I love the idea of flipping it instead of running out of school because it's summer break. What if they were running to school because it was such a place where the magic happened, where kids were so truly engaged and developed into the young people that, you know, they want to be in their future selves. They were running to it. That is exactly the picture of education I want to be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
So, Aaron, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what is the best way to get a hold of you?
I guess my parting words of advice, especially if there are any folks interested in going into education administration, is be ready to be in it for the long haul. You're going to have days that are not necessarily super positive. There's going to be some rough things that you have to go through as an administrator and tough decisions that you have to make that you wish you didn't. But just be committed, be in there for the long haul. You will reap a reward in the end. And then to contact me, probably the best way is find me on Twitter at Aaron J. Pena. That's AaronJPena. I'm on there all the time. And love to connect with people and build that PLN.
Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Aaron. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Aaron in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, including all the books mentioned and then how to connect with Aaron on Twitter. So links to all the resources, the best ways to connect. Aaron, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thanks, Daniel.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the Show Some Love link. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries, and I would love to connect with you. Connect via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and the website.